always said that fleshlights don't actually light up. Like, you should be able to use one to, like, to masturbate like when the power goes out.
Yeah. Or like at a rave.
Now, I'm not judging, of course, but do you actually need light to masturbate by?
Well, you know. Okay. Oh, shit. It should be like the shake power flashlights.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's how you charge your jack-off crystal.
Now, if you made it a black light, because after a while, that'd actually be kind of useful.
Yeah. Because, you know, after a while, you know when it's time to change your sheets.
Where did it go? Oh, there it is. Good. Conveniently, I had this black light right here. It makes cleanup a snap. That took me a second to get that, but it was worth it. You make funny jokes.
We're the best Star Trek podcast.
We're the best everything podcast, to be honest.
Suck at RFC. We're better than you.
Superhero Time presents that one episode of Star Trek. With Chris.
Real ladies have nacelles, boys.
Hey, Mickey.
Why, I'm no spy. I'm just a plain, simple tractor trailer.
Scott.
Every time I poop, it's just going to float around.
And Fort Max.
I'm gay, and I'm a little straight for Bashir.
So this week on that one episode of Star Trek, it's at the start of our Holodeck Misadventures month. And what better way to start than with Bashir playing James Bond?
Is there a better way to start?
No.
Oh, okay. Well then.
There's certainly worse ways to start.
The holodeck could be debatable, but that's less a holodeck misadventure and more just Sisko goes out of his mind for a week. If we hadn't already done Sisko Builds a Boat, I'd pitch that as a theme month.
What, Sisko going crazy for a week?
For a month, yes.
For a month, yeah. All right.
But, I mean, we've already used one of the best episodes up of that concept, so.
All true.
That was a good episode, too. One of my mm-hmm. favorites.
Yeah, we know. We know how you fucking...
I want to know how we got that space sextant to work.
At any lull in a conversation, you just start quoting it incessantly.
The one thing I can't do with that episode is actually quote the dialogue, so, I mean, otherwise I would have proven your point right now.
Thank God for small miracles. And I don't mean babies.
Fuck babies.
The curses.
Oh my God. What, are we going back to fleshlight jokes we were making earlier?
Lousy children.
Are you want to be on a list with...
Due to content restrictions beyond our control, we are unable to bring you the remainder of this sentence. We apologize for any inconvenience.
I'm already on lists. Whatever.
Speaking of lists, 316. The one thing I still have to edit. All right, so now that we've gotten our talk of watch lists out of the way, Mickey, why don't you do the summary?
Why don't I?
Because I don't think we'll be able to tear Scott's attention away from watching the episode again.
Yeah, because I'm just going to be shushing everyone so I can watch it again.
It's going.
Awesome.
Otherwise, it would be like, I don't know, a Beast Wars convention commentary.
You're losing me on that one, Fort Max.
I seem to recall that there was, like, one convention where they had voice actors there to do commentary for an episode that they were showing, and they were busy watching it.
Okay, fair enough. Beast Wars is a very good show.
You up front, could you put your hand down? We're trying to watch. I don't really care if you have questions. We're trying to... Rude. Just rude.
Well, the important thing, though, is that today is the day, as Rom tells to Quark. He's finally going to confess to Lita that he wants to bone her.
Wait.
I mean, he loves her.
Wait. Yeah. No, this is Dr. Bashir, I presume.
It is. This is how this episode starts out.
But it's supposed to be our man Bashir.
We have the best podcast in the universe.
You're right. It is. I have loaded up the wrong episode because I wasn't paying attention.
How did you not know we did this like 2 weeks ago?
I thought this seemed familiar. All right, so which... which season is this?
Four, I believe. It's four because it's before they change to is. The first contact.
We have a professional podcast from Podcast Land.
I could have swore you were doing that on purpose, too.
I was not. Actually, I was just not paying attention. I saw Bashir and the word and the title. I was like, ah, oh, here we go. That's the shit.
Thing is, though, like, I've had my moments, too, where I wanted to watch our man Bashir and ended up accidentally watching Dr. Bashir, I presume. Because the same reason, you just see Bashir in the title, and it's in basically the right place in the overall series, and yeah.
And they're both really good episodes.
For vastly different reasons, yes. good job, Mickey.
All right, so let's start fucking this chicken. Episode opens up with the Kool-Aid Man crashing through a plate glass window.
Oh, yeah.
Suddenly we see Bashir in a tux, a slut in a red dress, sharing champagne over a dead fat Chakotay with an eye patch.
Wow.
Yeah, I can see it.
So
the chick in the red dress, her tits are pretty amazing, gotta say.
Well, she's a Bashir girl, of course.
They look
so Fat Chakotay gets up with a knife. Bashir sees his reflection in the champagne, turns around, and pops the cork right in his face, which is not a metaphor for ejaculation.
At all. Let's just stamp out those rumors right now.
There's a visual metaphor.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Mm.
Perhaps even the subtext.
So as Bashir goes in for the kiss, as the scene reaches its crescendo, he's interrupted by clapping and Garrick cheering. And you can visibly see Bashir's erection deflate.
I think those pants need to be let out a little bit. If only he knew a good tailor.
Yeah, so was it ever confirmed that Garrick was actually, like, did he ever tailor anything?
Yes. He was an actual tailor.
Oh, okay. All right. So his name was Garrick Taylor.
Yes.
That's how Cardassian's name works, right? Like English names from Earth.
I know Scott is just baiting me right now to reveal Garrick's full real name.
Yeah.
But I'm not playing along.
All right.
So, Bashir is pissed because Garrick is intruding in his personal private fantasy life. Which is bad form in the 24th century.
Also illegal, they point out, which I thought was interesting. Like, illegal. It's illegal to bust in on somebody's holosuite.
Garrick does not care. Garrick is put out that ever since Bashir got this program, he hasn't been hanging out with Garrick anymore, which makes him sad. And he's being mysterious, which makes Garrick interested.
Right.
But Bashir just can't tear himself away from his new copy of GoldenEye.
Yeah.
Bump, 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 bump. GoldenEye, I'm old and ugly. GoldenEye, my skin's like leather. It's the best Tina Turner song.
So, just a quick aside. So, Garrick is Cardassian. He's clearly an alien. How do they feel about wearing weird human get-ups like tuxedos?
I imagine it's got to chafe their neck.
Look at his collar. It's goofy looking.
All the Cardassian collars are goofy looking.
No, they have to be because of biology, but yeesh.
But that's the thing that I kind of love, is that Garrick got into character for this. He didn't just show up in his regular clothes. He put on the tux just to fit in.
Yeah, which is cool.
Because he wants to play, too.
Or did he? Because, it's been established that the holodeck can fully simulate a wardrobe onto a person over their real clothes.
That's perhaps, what I was going to ask.
Yeah, perhaps he walked in his regular comfortable clothing and just had the holosuite dress him itself.
Oh, well, yes, I assume. But I assume that he requested it be done. I don't think it was automatic.
Well, yes, most likely. My point is more like, it probably doesn't feel like anything at that point.
It's like I'm wearing nothing at all. Nothing at all.
Just
nothing
my regular clothes.
So, yeah, that is a question, because we know in, like, TNG, we see him walk into and out of the holodeck wearing the costumes, assuming they get dressed in their rooms, then walk down to the holodeck.
Right.
So it's like walking through the hotel in your bathing suit. It's just kind of weird. But apparently,
no, I enjoy doing that.
Yes, but your bathing suit is a two-piece.
Yeah, front and back.
it's just a series of pasties.
Yes, front and back.
Oh, I don't even have to get wet for it to stick to me.
Three in front, four in back.
Oh my god.
But where do the shells go?
So glad we don't
on
animate.
The clams.
Basically Garrett just keeps begging Bashir, let me play, let me play, let me play. And Bashir's just no, no, no. And eventually the slut gets bored and leaves.
Which is funny.
So Garrick responds, oops, did I do that?
Yes, that's the joke I was going to make.
Cock blocks in space!
And Bashir relents and says, fine, since you're not going away, you're in this episode.
And
with
I'm not
me.
Getting any.
So after the theme song, Garrick's getting into character and scoping out the spy vibe of what's going on.
I like to think the characters are aware of the theme song. Thank you for that image.
Yes.
It plays over the station like it's an intercom. Anyway, go on.
So, Bashir's personal assistant, his Mrs. Moneypenny, shows up.
Oh, no, no. A much better name than that.
What was her name? Like Mona Slut and Plenty or something? Or
Yeah, Mona, oh, God, loves it. That's what it is. Mona loves it or something like that.
Or Mona Lovely?
No, I think it's Loves It.
Might be. I don't.
Here we go. Yeah, it's Mona Loves It.
Okay.
Again, an exquisite pair of tits.
Which also look pretty hard.
Yeah, they look like you could bounce quarters off of them, which is not necessarily a good thing.
Wouldn't be my first choice, put it that way.
No. No. Again, nice to look at, but yeah.
Fun to look at, not to eat.
Yes. Like babies.
Babies aren't even fun to look at.
So, Mona takes Bashir's spy case and offers to put it up, and she walks over to a mirror, and it swings around and reveals a case full of weapons.
Awesome.
And Garrick just sort of is bemused by all this, thinking, this is bullshit. Spies are nothing like this.
And that gets to the heart of why this episode is so fucking great.
Uh-huh.
Oh, I love this. I love Garrick being in this fantasy world, being a spy himself, and seeing how people see it and how pissed it makes him. Oh, I love it.
So Garrick is quietly questioning Bashir, like, okay, what the shit is this? Seriously?
Yeah.
And Bashir is just not even noticing how incensed Garrick is by all of this. And he's like, yes, this is how it was in the 60s. There was sluts and alcohol and intrigue and sexiness and gambling.
Yeah, that's my cover. I'm a billionaire playboy, so they pay for all this stuff. It's like your government pays for all this stuff. Yep. Isn't it great? Love it.
To Garrick leaving like holographic fingernail marks in the furniture. Oh, but what's going on with the Defiant? It's coming back home. It's a runabout. Whatever. Who cares?
It's a runabout because the Defiant's needed for a plot device later.
Okay, sure. Well, apparently O'Brien left the oven running with the window open or something, and the ship's about to blow up. So, warp core breach.
Kind of feel like we're glossing over some things here, like the fact that the ejection system isn't malfunctioning. It's not there. They removed the ejection system for the warp core.
What about the secondary backup ejection system?
Nope, all gone. Just took it out. They didn't notice that the thing was flying funny because like half the mass is missing.
Yeah, they gave it an ejectorectomy.
Oh my god, we'll never have kids now.
No, they're reversible.
Oh, Jesus. Just put a zipper in, it's fine. Zip, 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 zip.
Well, engineering bald guy on ops.
That's not even an engineering guy. That's Eddington. He's a security guy.
Whatever.
Poor bastard, really?
No, no. This will be important. We'll get to it, though.
I don't even remember him.
He was around in season 3 and 4.
Okay.
And then Arnie. He wasn't.
Yeah, we're like, okay, that's nice.
He was a recurring character. I'm not surprised you don't remember him particularly.
Who's home?
That's super. Good for you.
No, who came home? Because I heard a doorbell.
No?
No?
If it's somebody who lives there, why would they ring the doorbell? Do you smell almonds? Are you having a stroke?
I mean, Scott raises a good point. Why do strokes smell like almonds?
I thought it was burnt toast.
Why does burnt toast smell like almonds?
Why is it when you go into a coma, it feels like you're doing a podcast about Star Trek?
Why does it smell like almonds?
Okay, all right. Back on topic here.
Yeah.
So, the runabouts go in Kerplody, and, fuck, I've already forgotten this asshole's name.
Eddington.
Eddington.
Eddie. Yeah, Eddie here. He tries to beam them out, but because of plot, the transporter patterns get stuck in the buffer and they're running out of memory. So they've got to do something with them or something.
Yeah, pretty much.
Let's just technobabble our way past this so we can get to the point of this.
Seriously, how does this... Okay, like, the signal's degrading from... Because why? You have it stored in this one place, but it will degrade unless you move it somewhere else. Why?
Okay, so apparently the transporter buffer is incredibly high capacity, but also incredibly volatile form of memory.
Right.
I suspect it is literally whipped cream.
That is exactly what is in there.
Well, it's not whipped cream so much as it is a meringue.
Yeah. Look,
a fine is, quantum meringue, yes.
Don't
quantum meringue.
Point is, don't stick your dick in it.
I bet that would feel amazing.
Oh, it would. It does. It does, let me tell you. No, Chris has a very good question.
Yeah.
Fort Max Chris, not Chris.
Yes.
Yeah, use a
that
real
took
name,
me a second.
Yeah, sorry. I didn't say anything. XV has a very good question and has a very good answer to that. That's what it is. It's highly volatile. It's short lived.
However, their excuse for why they just can't materialize them is flimsy as shit.
Yeah, it made sense to me watching it. I don't care. I'm nerdy.
It does, but it's like really,
really. I'm okay with it.
But
was their excuse?
Some of the energy from the warp core explosion traveled along the transporter beam and blew out the transporter, basically. Like, it blew out the worky bits, the blinky parts.
Right.
And they only have the one.
If it can't blink, it doesn't work.
Yeah, they only have the one on ops. That's the only transporter in all of DS9, apparently.
Never mind that they have, like, 3 or 4 more runabouts and the Defiant.
Yeah. The premise of this episode is fucking retarded.
But really? I love
it.
The transporter accident is retarded. No.
Aw.
It's all just to get to the point of the episode.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. I mean, I like the fact that they beam out in the middle of, like, a warp core explosion. So, of course, there's going to be consequences. And, yeah, it's a little weird.
There's consequences, except for all those times when they do the exact same thing and there's not consequences.
Well, they cut it too close this time. They always do it like a second before. This was right as it happened. I don't know, man. I like that. I like the fact that they did something interesting with a transporter thing.
Like, there's probably some other way they could have gotten around to the point of the episode. Maybe a little less flimsily, but, like, I'm with Mickey on this. The premise is weak, but the reason they have to use a weak premise is worth it.
Oh, absolutely.
Okay, here's a simpler thing. The runabout explodes, and then the transporter on DS9 was sabotaged, and it shunts them into the holodeck.
Yeah, but then you have to explain how DS9 gets sabotaged. A runabout, I can understand, but the entire station?
Dominion, that's all you have to say. The changeling spy.
God damn it.
Yeah, or heck, you could even do that without the whole runabout exploding thing and have, it be a holodeck malfunction where they're, like, I don't know, running a simulation.
Yeah.
There's a million different ways.
Okay, so here's the way to do it. You have two simultaneous holodeck programs going on. The holosuite that the command staff are in having their simulation or whatever malfunctions, and for the first time ever, somebody decides to try to beam someone out of a malfunctioning holodeck, and then that, for whatever reason, fucks up. Add your flimsy technobabble to that, and they get dumped into the other running program. Yeah, you could avert the whole runabout thing and actually have the bizarre situation that I don't think any episode's ever done before of having two holodeck programs running at the same time in fiction.
Yeah, so basically, their excuse for getting the crew holodized, they could have done a better job on.
Now, like, the technical side past the initial cause, I kind of like, because, like, yeah, they have the capacity to store the physical patterns. That's easy for them to do. They do that all the time. But then it comes down to the neural patterns or whatever. And just because of the complexity of preserving that, they have to dump basically every bit of station memory to make
it is safe. It is probably the world's largest core dump.
Yep. And I think Rom makes a comment later, which is correct in the fiction, that that information is stored on a quantum level, mm-hmm. not on the molecular level. So that it takes up just magnitudes more data than anything else, which all works, all checks out.
Yeah, I mean, I like that component of it. It's just the getting from point A to, I guess, point A and a half on your way to point B. That's,
sure.
That's the weak part of it that we're kind of hanging up on a little bit.
Yeah. But let's just move on past it.
Thank you.
Meanwhile, back in the A-plot, Garak is getting fitted for a new spy clothing, and he doesn't like the collar.
Never put a turtleneck on a Cardassian.
That sounds kind of sexy.
Bashir probably, went and off to the side and, find the most uncomfortable collar you can, the most restrictive, tight thing.
Give like being choked out by a midget all day.
So, Garak comments, this all seems a bit ostentatious for a spy. And Bashir's like, oh, no, I'm a jet setter. I'm supposed to be this way.
Right.
I mean, I like Garak not understanding the concept of jet setter.
Yeah, because Bashir keeps using these very Earth-centric terms.
Mm-hmm. Also,
specifically
very,
60s-centric.
Yes, very outmoded Earth-centric terms.
So it's time for another wall to spin around.
Yeah,
because the bar spins around, and we're greeted by slutty Kira.
Woohoo!
Not the usual one. The other one. Not the alternate universe one.
Not lesbian Kira, just regular.
But lesbian Kira is also a slutty Kira.
Well, that is true, she is. But Kira introduced herself as Colonel Anastasia Komanov, KGB. But your dad just calls her Katya.
Yeah, this is one of those scenes that reminds me, Nana Visitor was really attractive. I always thought she was really kind of mean-looking back in the day, back in the 90s, but wow.
There was the nose.
Possibly the boy hair.
Yeah.
Boy hair didn't help.
And possibly the character.
Yeah, the fact that she'd probably stab you in the face as soon as sleep with you. Yeah.
Yeah.
But that just makes a good actress.
Yes. Also, what the scene reminds me of is the fact that Bashir and Kira are boning behind the scenes.
Right.
Yep.
That's why Kira was pregnant for, part of a season.
Sorry.
That was his.
You're a doctor. You know what causes this. Come on, man.
So Bashir is surprised to see Kira, and Garak is delighted to see more perversion in Bashir. Why, doctor, you scamp. Yeah. Bashir's like, no, this is wrong. Computer, fix this
shit. You dirty birdie.
Computer, fix this shit back to normal. who the fuck is pranking me? Is Ashton Kutcher up there?
But of course, Zine, he immediately assumes that it's Garak messing around with the program.
Yes.
Or having, you know, invited Kira, because that makes so much sense.
Yeah, exactly. His initial reaction is, okay, Kira, cut it out. You know, it's like, well, you really think she would be doing this for fun? Has she ever been a prankster before?
Has she ever been a fan of the Holosuites before? No.
Right.
Well, her and Dax and their princess garbs.
Yes, because Dax forced her to. Kira was not enjoying it at all.
I think that's what Dax enjoyed about it.
Oh, probably so, but the point remains, Kira is just not into Holosuites.
I love Dax. That she's old. Only enjoyment she gets is from trolling other people.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
Because if she weren't in this simulation, she'd be on ops going, hey guys, I have a new Holosuite program I want to run. No, stop. I could run it any moment. That's fucking shit-eating grin that she gets. I might do it. You never know.
Okay, so the computer tells Bashir, shit's fucked up, yo. So Bashir calls up the ops saying, I've got a problem here. And they're like, shut up, we've got a problem here.
And then they hear Kira's voice in the background. And yeah. Everyone's all like, what? 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 Hang on, doctor, we'll get back to you.
Don't leave.
Then I think around this time, Odo shows up.
No, Odo's been on the ops the whole time.
Well, he didn't mention it.
Well, he hasn't done anything of interest or importance. He's just there feeding dialogue to Eddie.
Pretty much.
Yes, and I want to. This is part of the point I want to make. The two officers responding to this highly technical and scientific crisis are Odo and a Federation security man.
Right.
Well, you know, DS9 only has one science officer.
And she's indisposed. Also, only one engineer.
Well, no. There's Rom and the other people on the day shift. Or the swing shift.
It kind of runs in the same issue from TNG that they call security and Geordi shows up. Like, what? No, okay. I guess. Sure.
Look, if you're in a red uniform, you count.
Yeah, they just grab you on the way. They just grab the first person they see wearing that color and go, okay, you're with me. Come on. But I'm on duty. Oh, come on.
But I'm the captain.
Right.
That's why they changed the uniform style. They needed to have a different style of uniform for the lower ranked people so that you could just tell, like, at a distance, okay, they're valid to grab. They're not senior officers.
They're valid to grab. Welcome to Starfleet. Or hard junior officers are valid to grab.
So Bashir has got to keep the simulation running. So Kira, fake Kira, pops in and says, I'm not here to pleasure you. I'm here to hand you this file folder. Top seismologists have determined there's artificial earthquakes happening around the world. And Garrick's response is,
that's not so difficult.
That's easy. Yeah.
I did that when I was a kid.
Bashir's like, shut up, Garrick. You're out of character. And Garrick looks sad.
Well, and Colonel Kira is like, does he know something? No, he knows nothing.
Yeah.
He's an idiot.
So, who is the earthquake scientist? Surprise, it's Dax.
looking pretty cute in those glasses, gotta say.
They're very Sally Jesse.
Yeah, they are. And Sally Jesse was pretty sexy in herself, too, so whatever.
My response is going to be that it was 1997, but okay.
Yeah, you know what? Do with that whatever you want. I know how I feel about it, and I'm comfortable with it.
Anyway, so the door opens up, and there's Mona standing there, and she's been stabbed between the shoulder blades by a knife, and in walks Potato Eye Patch Man.
Potato Eye Patch Man. Oh, you're at the credits.
No, it's O'Brien, and he's playing a villain. I don't know.
Falcon?
Because he has a big falcon on his eye patch?
Yeah, sure, we'll go with that. I was trying to think of something offensive to say, but nothing's coming to mind. So,
the great potato bird of the galaxy.
I was trying to combine like something Irish stereotype with like a Bond villain name, and just nothing was coming. Yes, nothing was coming.
Oh, okay.
That's a real word. It's in the dictionary. Look it up.
What was the Irish guy's name in Austin Powers who had the Lucky Charms?
Fuck, I don't know.
That guy. Basically, he's that guy. They're always after me Lucky Charms.
Look, we're losing our momentum here.
Oh, sorry, I was yawning.
Oh, my God.
No, I'm tired. Plus, I've been drinking, so, you know.
But yes, potato eye patch.
Yeah, so he's kidnapping Bashir. Oh. He's going to kill him or something. But
wait, potatoes have eyes. But this one's got an eye patch. Uh-huh. Is there a joke in there somewhere?
Yeah, I assumed that was the joke in the first place.
Oh, okay. Okay, I've caught up. Move on.
Okay, anyway, Bashir asked to give Kira a goodbye bone. And O'Brien's like, sure, I'll watch. Zip.
Let me slide this eye patch off.
Yeah.
So Bashir yanks off one of Kira's earrings, and what the hell does he do with it?
He tosses it, and it explodes in a smoke flash bomb.
That's right, yes. Sorry, Netflix is being stupid. I'm doing the worst job of the summary.
Yes, but Scott seemed too interested in doing it, so I couldn't let him.
Yeah, I really super enjoyed this episode.
I can't let Scott have things he likes. That's why he's Ken.
All right, so surprise flash bomb and then karate choppy time. And Bashir, Kira, and Garrick disable all the goons.
And then Garrick tries to shoot Potato Eye Patch O'Brien.
And Bashir responds with a no, 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 Looney Tunes Daffy Duck type moment.
No, no, no. This will not do at all.
That's the weirdest voice. So, like, I can tell you're trying for 3 or 4 different things there, and none of them are hitting.
You failed 3 times by 1 effort. Congratulations.
You got the hat trick.
Yeah, so potato patch.
So one thing that I learned here is that, you're bleeding. That means the safety is off.
Why didn't we just call him Potato Patch? That would have been so much simpler.
I know, because no one listens to me.
All right, so safeties are off. Bashir says, we can't kill them. Garrick says, but what if we have to? What if you have to choose who's going to live and who's going to die? This is things that a real spy does.
Yeah, I like how Garrick immediately goes, someone's going to die. I will make sure of that, and I will try to have an effect on who does, but someone's going to die in this. I mean, it's like he's immediately convinced that this is going to end in tragedy.
Well, except it's not tragedy for Garrick. It's vindication of like, oh, shit, yeah, this is the real shit now.
Yeah, pretty much.
Right.
I'm delighted that you're not having fun anymore.
How many people have to die for his jollies?
And you know, even if it wasn't for vindication, Garrick still would not consider this a tragedy.
No, it's just a day at the office for him.
It's math.
Yeah. It's math. 2 + 2 equals me living.
Right. It's more like, 6. Minus 1, because there's 6 officers, and if one of them dies, then I get to live. I don't know. Okay, maybe we're taking this metaphor too far. Anyway, move on.
Garrick math always comes down to the result of I live. It's basically a reverse form of math where you start with the solution, solve backwards, you find out the problem.
Right.
Jeopardy math.
Yeah.
Anyway, so they decide, let's go to Paris.
Ah, gay Paris. Oh, God. Let's hope not. Fuck it. We're going with the Delta Quadrant.
Meanwhile, let's check in with the real world as Odo and Eddie are checking with Quark and Rom about the holosuites.
Oh, boy.
And they're horrified to see how Rom has patched the holosuite together.
Look, where's the imaging array? Behind the spatula.
Made of yttrium. It's a perfect plasma conductor. Again, Rom proving that he's an excellent engineer, which I think is just fabulous. Oh, Rom is so great.
So Eddie waves a tricorder at the machinery and says, oh, I found them. Yeah, we knew they were in the holosuite. You put them there.
No, they're just very tiny. I couldn't see them.
Okay, no. So what it came down to, what it came down to was every free bit of space in the computer memory was used to store the neural patterns. They didn't have any indication, like, any specific place they went, and they didn't exactly know until Bashir called in that they had manifested somewhere.
Yeah, but they already know that they're in the holosuite, though. But they already...
Well, they didn't know exactly which component of the holosuite, the actual physical little doodad memory that they were like being stored in. And probably because maybe they had multiple holosuites. Maybe they had to figure out which one. I don't know.
The one
probably
Bashir was
the
in.
One Bashir's in.
Yeah, but the thing is, the way they've had to rewire it, though, they don't know which one that is from the control panel because so much work's been done on it. It's such a mess.
Look, the point is, when you're watching the episode, it makes sense in the flow of the scene.
Damn right.
Like, you can
I'll allow it.
You can establish that. Yeah, well, that part of them is actually being, the information is being stored in the system. Now, what do we do about it?
So they're trying to figure, yeah, so how do we get them back out? It's like, well, we have to transport them somewhere, but our transporters are shot, and we don't have any computer memory to do this anyway. It's like, oh, well, we have the...
We'll just get O'Brien to fix the transporters.
Oh, wait, no, damn.
Okay, we'll get Potato Patch to fix the transporters.
Oh, wait, he's in there. God damn it. This is just not working at all.
Also, I figured out why they couldn't use the runabout transporters to solve the problem.
Because it blew up?
No, at some point they decided runabouts can only transport two people at a time.
Oh, okay. So they wrote themselves a little limitation on there. That's good. So the Defiant, however, has a transport system that can work, and its independent power source and computer core. So,
but the problem is, you need Sisko or Worf to command the Defiant to use them.
Well, Kira commands it sometimes. Oh, wait. Dax could... Oh. Huh. Well, it's not like the Defiant has to fly anywhere.
That's true. It's just docked. It's fine.
Look, basically all they're doing is hooking up some jumper cables to it to run some stuff in the house while the power's out.
Yeah, there's like a Cat 5 cable running out through the hallway.
But you need a command officer to have the keys to unlock the door.
Yeah. It's okay. It's okay. Eddington knows where the little magnetic box is with the spare.
Yeah, it looks like a rock. It's just laying in one of the corridors on the promenade.
No, it's one of those things you stick up in the wheel well.
Oh.
You should have spacewalked to go get it.
Yeah. Good thing Worf's not there. Zero-G makes him queasy.
Yeah, it's stuck at... I'm stuck onto the side of one of the impulse drives.
Uh-huh.
Speaking of Worf, where is Worf?
Well, funny you should ask.
Well, not
he's
that
gambling and smoking.
Everybody's smoking.
Which makes him the coolest character in the scene.
Oh, yeah.
Doesn't he blow smoke rings?
Yes, and it's awesome.
I'm surprised more Klingons don't smoke.
Yeah, it would be something that the Klingons would do. I mean, but then again, it's like if it affects their battle prowess at all, it's unhealthy, they may not do it.
Oh, they're Klingons. They have, like,
well, it leads
lungs.
To death by being bedridden, which is bad.
Yeah. Well, they probably have three lungs, so whatever.
Their lungs are probably made of bone.
I'm just thinking probably like the Klingon version of a cigar. Like, you take a puff off of it and then you, like, exhale fire.
Right.
The Klingon cigars are best smoked live.
It's all screaming and on fire.
It's got more flavor to it than a regular cigar.
They breed some kind of life form just to be their cigars.
Cigar's got little legs, little vestigial legs. Oh my god, it's trying to get away.
They just light snakes on fire and put them in their mouth.
Did rattle first this time. Puh.
That's the filter.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, so Bashir is sidling up to Worf at the gambling table, telling him that he's a top seismologist, which isn't suspicious at all.
top seismologist.
I'm a top seismologist, and these are my two friends.
Yeah.
He is the one who stands at the top of seismology.
I'm the top. This is my bottom. Pleased to meet you.
So while they begin to play Baccarat and gamble and do the whole thing.
So basically what it is, to get to the person behind the earthquake problem, they need an invitation or apparently 5 million francs.
That's a lot of francs. Do they count Francis's?
Not even mentioning the beans.
meanwhile, Eddie discovers that the true way sabotaged the runabout. Whoopty shit.
First reference of the true way.
Yes, out of a total of like 2.5, I think.
The Cardassian Tal Shiar.
No, it's the Cardassian
Maquis.
Basically, look, there was a lot of political stuff going on with the Cardassians in.
Were they
rebels? Season.
I thought they were just a splinter government group.
They are, but Tal Shiar was working for the government. Remember,
the Tal Shiar was the Romulan intelligence.
Yeah,
I thought the Tal Shiar was trying to take over the government, though.
Well, they do like later on,
much like in the later.
Well, yeah, like in the early 2400s.
Yeah.
Yeah, the true way were the ones trying to make Cardassia great again, I guess.
Basically, yes.
True. All true. That's a good way to put it.
How'd that work out for them?
Not too good.
Given that they only get like 2.5 mentions?
Okay, so yeah. In the start of season 2, Bajor has the Circle, which is pretty much their separatist movement trying to make Bajor great again by pushing out all alien influences. They were being supplied by the Cardassians, spoilers. And now the Cardassians have their own version of this, the true way, which gets a lot less screen time.
Mm.
And is probably not backed by the Bajorans. The Cardassians had a lot of political stuff going on late season 3 and into season 4, so this is just one of those things that kind of ended up going nowhere.
So one of the cool things is Bashir, because this is his fantasy, I guess, wins the 5 million francs. Pretty handily, it seems.
Yeah, like the basic functions of the program are still running where he can't lose.
Right, because part of the story is that he wins. Otherwise, you know, the whole thing kind of falls apart.
Yeah.
So what I like is that Worf's character, Duchamp or whatever, he reaches in, pulls out another cigar, but this one has a red wrapper.
Mm-hmm.
Which I thought, oh, that's interesting. And then he puffs them all with magic dust.
Oh.
Bill Cosby's sleepy time powder.
So Bashir wakes up in Avery Brooks' home.
It's a full house. I choose this to be true.
That's a joke I made on Twitter. And featuring Avery Brooks as himself.
Yes.
I brought my own Nerub jacket. Is that all right with you?
So they're at Mount
You
Everest.
Can tell Avery Brooks is having so much fun with this episode.
Yeah, he's chewing that scenery like it's made out of bubblegum.
He was probably having the most fun of all.
Probably.
Oh, and flashing outside for a minute, I kind of like the ultimate team of Eddington, Odo, Rom, and Quark as having to be the ones who save the day.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's just like, how much lower can you drop?
Nog.
He's at the Academy.
Nog and Jake. If Nog and Jake did it, that
yes,
would be a
Yes, if Jake was here and participating, yeah. That would be worse.
Right.
If Nog was here, I think that would actually end up having been useful.
Well, that's a good point.
Mm-hmm.
No, Jake will be there to be writing the holodeck program as it's happening.
Right.
No, okay, so remember the Next Generation episode in season 1, The Big Goodbye? The first major holodeck failure episode? And
that episode was a failure, I'll give you that.
Right, but Wesley was there.
It was a completely failed episode.
Wesley was sitting there outside while Geordi was standing back and letting him try to fix the problem.
Yes.
Yeah, so at least we avoided that with this.
Anyway, so Bashir and Sisko are doing the Bond-villain-Bond conversation. Blathering about being suave, that type of shit. Until we get finally the largest rotating wall reveal of the episode. which means they built three rotating walls for this episode, which I kind of love. Mm-hmm. And this one is fucking enormous.
According to Memory Alpha, this episode took forever to record because all the sets they had to build and everything was so complicated. Mm-hmm. Worth it, though. Well worth it. Great episode.
Look, sometimes you just have to sacrifice for your art.
Yeah, yeah.
And your art is reproducing James Bond in Star Trek.
Which is a noble goal.
So, Sisko delivers his James Bond villain reveal of what he's doing, as he's going to kill everyone so society can be rebuilt again.
Pretty standard Bond villain kind of stuff.
It's about as tropey as you get. Sure. Although I love that it's all about releasing the molten lava.
Yes. And this somehow will deflate the Earth and make it the crust shrink. So where's all that lava going?
Well, it's 1960s science. So, like, the inside of the Earth is a pressure vessel. So when they, punch the holes in there and the lava can vent out, the pressure will be released and everything will just settle down until it equalizes again.
Just like putting too much air into a balloon.
Exactly. It's so crazy. It just might work. You fucking idiot. Yeah, that's the only thing that made my eye twitch listening to the explanation on this. I'm like, no, they're in a holodeck. It's fine. It's fine. It's okay.
They're in holodeck 1960.
Yeah.
It all makes sense.
I grit my teeth. It's fine. Just do it.
And Sisko's mountain paradise with the only place left standing above water.
Yeah, 23,000 feet above sea level.
Okay. How much water is on the planet exactly?
Yeah. Well, you shrink down the... just move on. Just move on.
They kind of explained it as releasing so much magma that it just displaces the oceans up.
Lava?
Yeah, that's what I said. Just like raise the bottom of the sea floor until the water covers the surface.
Sure.
That would be more plausible, at least. Be a lot of lava, but,
Oh, we have plenty.
Whole planet full.
Yeah. That's where I keep all my lava.
So they blather on and on until Potato Patch shows up.
Hey.
Because we got to get all the main characters back together in the scene.
Oh, and this is also when we find out Dax is working for Sisko. I mean, Avery Brooks.
Meanwhile, outside, the stakes are being raised. They're running out of time. There's engineering to do.
Yes, as Rom hooks the jumper cables up to the Defiant.
They need to get that lightning to USB adapter.
God damn you, Apple, and your dongles. So many dongles.
Why were the Cardassians still using Firewire?
Yeah. It's a totally failed technology.
There were rape plugs.
Oh my god. I think I've seen videos on that.
Alright, so now to the underground mountain lair. Where Bashir and Garak are tied up. And there's a countdown clock. And Avery Brooks is talking about repopulating the human race with a lot of fine women's.
Mm-hmm. Including Dax.
And Kira.
And Kira.
And that's about it. That's only two women that are going to be surviving. So they're going to be very busy.
Right.
Well, they're just going to have, the little tip of Mount Everest to live on. So they probably should pace themselves.
Yeah, not really sure why he thinks it's going to be such an island paradise, because it's still going to be cold as shit. Whatever. Just move on.
No, Scott.
Mount Everest is also going to sink.
Yeah, when the surface of the Earth shrinks because they let the magma out, the top of the mountain will be in the warm zone again, and it will become a tropical paradise.
I'm okay with warp field technology and transporters, but when we start talking about crap like this, I can't deal.
This is exactly like a warp field. When you shoot the lasers into the warp field and release the magma from it, it shrinks, and then the ship goes faster. That's basically exactly how a warp core works.
I don't know enough to really verify that, but I am going to add it to the Wikipedia.
God damn it. No. Oh, I'm going to be up all night again fixing all your shit.
This is going to be like that time I changed all the mentions of pre-double Kamen Riders on the Transformer Wiki to Masked Rider, and then he got immediately changed back.
Bad times.
Well, nerd on the Transformers Wiki.
All right, so it's time to leave Bashir and Garrick tied up to die next to the giant laser. But Dax is there, and Bashir turns on the charm and woos Dax like nobody's business, proving that this is indeed a fantasy.
Mm-hmm. And the whole time, Garrick's just...
If he rolled his eyes any harder, they'd pop out and roll across the ground.
So apparently he gets Dax so wet that she slips him the key so he can escape.
Well, it just falls out.
Boop. Into his hands, which are tied behind his back.
Hey, she's got a lot of back pressure.
Boop. So Garrick and Bashir escape the laser as it goes off and run off into the caves.
That laser looks a lot more like a rocket.
Shush. And this is where Garrick has just had e fucking enough.
Yes. He loses his shit.
How dare you mock my life's work?
How dare you not kill any of these guys?
I know. Here's our opportunity to kill some main cast members, and you're not doing it.
Oh, also,
prick.
I like in the process, Bashir is like taking little pieces of a one-shot gun out of his clothing.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, that's pretty
rad.
That was
a nice touch.
Yeah, so that's good.
Garrick's had enough of nobody dying. And so he says, you know what? Fuck this. I'm out. Computer.
I'm killing someone.
Or everyone.
To which Bashir points a gun at Garrick and tells him, no, I'll shoot you. It's very dramatic. And
yeah,
we all believe he'll actually
traumatized.
Do it. Even Garrick believes he'll actually shoot him.
Yeah, isn't he like a doctor who has to take like a Hippocratic oath or something?
Now he's in the holodeck program.
I don't think you lose your humanity when you go into a holodeck program.
He's a spy. He's not a doctor. Right. He's a spy.
All right.
Yeah, you know, maybe he's finally following Garrick's example of how to be a spy and not have any humanity. But Bashir shoots Garrick, and Garrick is like, you shot me. Picard never shot me.
Not even my father shot me.
Ah, two equally valid pads on that joke. Thank you, Cormac.
Yeah. I'll take both of them. They both work.
I like that Bashir not only shot him, he shot him in the fucking neck.
Yes.
I know. Grazed like the carotid artery or something.
Did you just like shoot him in the arm or the leg or something? Nope. I was aiming for your throat. So you couldn't say the word computer
did.
Arch.
He was going, yeah, just to shut him up.
Yeah, and
then yeah, I like that push. Garrick is both A, shocked, and B, aroused. It's like, you are a real spy. Ooh.
Yeah, he's alarmed that Bashir would shoot him, but also like really pleased that Bashir would shoot him.
He's proud of him. He's proud of Bashir.
That you have been paying attention.
Yeah.
You are a spy after all.
But you are a soulless murdering monster.
But Doctor, what if you had killed me? Well, Garrick, don't take this the wrong way, but I was trying to.
Yeah. Which, still, you know, I don't believe that for a second. I think he's just a terrible
Garrick's
shot.
Warms Garrick's cold-blooded little heart.
It's also, like, extremely cliche.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, they both get captured again by Avery Brooks.
And Potato Patch.
Yeah. So Avery starts monologuing and hamming.
Which and is then fun. Eddington calls down and lets them know that it's only 5 minutes until Natick explodes.
Oh no!
So Bashir has to think fast. And he flips the script. Instead of trying to defeat Sisko, he'll join him. Because fuck this planet. It's bullshit.
Fuck this gay Earth.
Uncle Garrick at you.
Magic Knight Gay Earth?
Is that a game or an anime?
Both, actually.
Yeah.
Or a lifestyle. Sounds like it could be a lifestyle.
Or a livestock.
Yeah.
Like your mom.
No, that would imply she's alive.
Oh, Jesus.
Well, that went in places.
Yeah.
Well, remember, there are a few things about your mom. She's a whore. You can buy... You can... get her services for a nickel, and also she died. Those are the three types of your mom jokes.
Just also, she's nasty.
The way you say that, Fort Max, just pleases me. I don't know. You just such a clarity to the way you say that. It's unquestionable when you say it.
Anyway. Bashir says, "You know, I'm joining you. I'm pushing that button. I'm destroying the earth."
I like that Avery Brooks is like, oh, you think going over there and destroying the console is going to do anything? He's like, no. Click.
To which Brooks is just like, huh, I didn't see that coming.
I did not expect to win this.
Yeah.
Well, I'll just kill you anyway.
Right, that's the DM railroad that is. That's the DM railroading.
Yep. You will not destroy my plot.
Yeah. There it is.
So anyway,
I was meant to be the one to... It was my turn to press the button, damn it!
So, right about then, the transporters kick in, and they get beamed back to the Defiant, and everything's all good. Hooray.
And they're all crammed on the Defiant's tiny little transporter pad.
Avery Brooks is a little annoyed he didn't get some of somebody else's hair transported to the top of his head.
And the Brian's really annoyed at what Rom has done to the Defiant.
Yeah.
Because like any good transporter accident, they have no memory of what's happened in the meantime.
Yeah, which I thought was a little bit of a cop. I mean, I think it would have been a lot more fun if they remembered everything.
Although, as iffy as the science already is, for this, that probably would have been pushing it a little bit farther.
Yeah, we wouldn't want...
Since it was explained that it was just using their physical... that it was just replacing the character models with the
their
crew.
Physical patterns, yeah.
Yeah.
Right, right.
Essentially, what it comes down to is, like... There was an episode of Next Generation that did this where they had to restore Picard from an earlier transporter pattern and he didn't remember anything that had happened in the intervening time.
Yeah. Well, something happened to old Pat Scotty, too. On the Dyson Sphere.
Except he was just stuck in a loop.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, but he was still in the pattern buffer, basically. He said
right, but there wasn't like an iteration of him existing somewhere.
It was just his pattern being copied right. Back and forth continuously.
Uh-huh.
Right. No, I hear you. I see.
And if Deep Space Nine would have had more than one pattern buffer, maybe they could have done that here.
Yeah, well, this station wasn't exactly built to Starfleet spec, so.
Well, and they didn't have
backups.
They didn't have a Scotty or an O'Brien to make the modifications.
Right. They had a ROM though, and that was good enough.
They didn't even have a Geordi to make a Leah Brahms to get things fixed.
I still wish he would have used that more often, like as an excuse to get Leah Brahms back, like every chance he could get. Like, Geordi, we got to get the warp core back on. Oh, well, let me go get Leah Brahms. No, stop that.
No. You know, when Rob eventually joined the engineering crew, his belt should have had a spatula on it.
Weird Al would approve.
But we don't know what's in Rom's toolkit.
That's true. That's true. I imagine it'd be full of, like, bugs and worms and slugs.
That's
and...
his lunchbox, not his toolkit.
Oh, my bad. Sorry, I picked up the wrong one.
No. Oh, wait, are we sure it's his lunchbox? Because I thought he was going to be eating whatever first shift was.
Oh, he grew out of that. We saw him grow out of that.
Well, we saw him grow out of bacon.
Yeah, which... immediately loses all my respect for him.
It gave him the runs.
Ew.
I mean, it's a digestive system built around the concept of breaking down, like, bug exoskeletons and stuff.
That's true.
I don't know how you'd expect it to play well with pork.
I don't know, but that sounds like Sounds like fun. I'm going to put that in my dating profile. Plays well with pork.
I think that's already in Mickey's profile.
It is. Well, before the episode ends, Garrick asks Bashir, have we seen the last of Agent Julian Bashir? And Bashir says, no, he'll return in Latinum is Forever.
Ooh, very good.
And while we didn't get another episode completely focused around this, it did appear in the background a couple more times.
Oh, just in the background? They never have a secret spy, Bashir?
So, in season 6 or 7, it is a small part of, I think, the secondary plot to an episode, and by that point, some of the senior staff have actually taken to participating in the roles they had this episode.
Right.
O'Brien actually complains that he's always typecast as Falcon.
Yeah, I heard that he was really annoyed by that. Also, heard that Nana Visitor really enjoyed this episode because she got to play, like, you know, a saucy Russian spy, and that was really fun for her. So I thought that was kind of funny. So, I don't know. Like I said, I really enjoyed the episode. I watched the whole way through. I enjoyed the technobabble. I enjoyed the plot. I think it all made sense. It was fun to watch the character growth. It was a fantastic Star Trek episode, even if it was based around a holodeck/transporter accident goof.
It's a really fun, goofy episode.
It really is. It was so enjoyable. Remember when Star Trek was fun and enjoyable?
Yes, I believe it was a Tuesday.
As he takes a long drag off his cigarette and stares off into the rain.
Now, I think it was Wednesdays here.
No, that was Voyager, Fort Mac. That wasn't enjoyable or fun.
Oof.
Well, local station here aired both the series and had Deep Space Nine on after Voyager.
Oh, interesting. I guess that kind of makes sense. Around
what became the UPN station, it actually had been airing Next Generation since the beginning.
Around here, the syndication slots for Next Generation and Deep Space Nine were on the weekends.
Mm.
Hey, Mickey, if I remember correctly, didn't DS9 come on at like midnight in the 90s when we were trying to watch it?
No.
It came out
7 o'clock Saturdays.
Okay, DS9? So in the Nashville viewing area, it was not unusual for it to actually premiere at like 10:35 p.m.
Weird. It's like I remember it some of the later seasons they moved it to like midnight or some crazy shit.
Actually, I remember it back. Yeah, later seasons. Yeah, I think it did get bumped back to something.
Yeah.
Really, like 11, I think.
Yeah, something crazy.
But it premiered.
Yeah, the premiere was in prime time.
Oh, sure.
Is it considered prime time on the weekend?
No, I don't think so.
Yeah, probably not. But most of the run was late night, in my experience.
Hmm.
Now, I think in the Chicago area, because I saw a few episodes in first run up there, the later seasons ended up being in like late afternoon, like 5 o'clock. So there's really no rhyme or reason to it. It's just wherever the station wants to put it.
Yeah, apparently. So I just remember it being difficult to actually watch DS9 when it came out. So, but whatever. Hey, that's what Netflix is for now. Hooray, the future.
No, but I remember, like, the first season at the very least, and yeah, the first season, maybe through season 3, I remember seeing him at, like, 7, 8 o'clock in Nashville.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess it was just later that they kind of shipped it off. Didn't really hurt it, though.
No, it was still really good. I mean, because I think by then, like, VCRs, you could program to record from certain times so you didn't miss stuff.
Yeah, Scott, that was called 1987 onward.
Yeah, well, there you go. It was in that time period. It was after VCRs, but before, like, TiVos and, you know, digital recordings.
I was 4 years old and could program a VCR.
Well, I'm glad you gave some reason for your parents to keep you around.
Yeah.
But could you program a VCR that used the switch system instead of the buttons?
Oh, God, no.
No, that's what we had, something like that. Like
you had a switch system?
You actually had to go to the VCR itself. You couldn't program it from the remote control.
But it was a series of like 24 different little up and down physical switches?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay, impressive then.
I was a special child.
Was it a top loader?
My dad had a top loader, but no, this wasn't the top loader.
What, like a Super Nintendo?
No, more like a cassette deck.
Right, I know, I'm just saying.
I'm not sure that top loader VCR actually worked during my lifetime.
But it had two slots on the top vertically. I think that was a toaster.
No, we had one of those too, which also mostly didn't work during my lifetime.
I seem to recall that Russ's family used to have a top-loading VCR that was actually two parts, and then it had a remote connected by a wire.
Oh my God. He also had that microwave that was older than him.
Yeah, and it was amazing too. That microwave cooked the best food.
Yeah, because...
Because it had the good components.
Of course, the lymphoma, you know, after using it for a few years, kind of took away from the treats.
The microwave was so old, it actually had a dial to turn the time with like a little line pointing down.
Like the ones they have at gas stations?
I don't know. I don't go to gas station microwaves. But yeah, it wasn't a digital microwave.
They make gas standards.
You know, you can still buy microwaves with dials instead of keypads.
I was unaware of this. I've only ever seen digital ones. Hmm. Like even, you know, in the 80s.
I mean, you know, that's kind of your, like, ultimate cheap-out option. Have a dial instead of buttons.
I just remember the one that Russ had was just massive. It was built like a tank. It had the fake wood grain on the outside.
You know, I think my grandparents had the very same thing.
Oh, it was massive.
It was about the size of an actual oven.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the sound it would make was just like, you know, like soul rattling.
You know, my grandma had one that came with its own cart.
Oh my God.
It was, I think she had to have had that thing since the 70s.
That is awesome. Yeah, because the one Russ had to be older than 78, so.
And actually, the toaster she had, I think she may have had since the 50s.
I mean, my grandparents had a refrigerator from at least that far back. It was, you know, where the freezer was just a small little inset box, not its own compartment.
Mm-hmm.
Still worked up to the day we sold the house, too.
Yeah. Durable goods.
Yeah. Stuff that's not engineered to break after a few years.
That's right.
Yeah, actually, with that toaster, it stopped working because it actually had a motor that would raise and lower the toast.
Okay, I've been with that.
She got a new one, but then, returned it because I was able to fix the thing, because what it was is that just some gunk had gotten gummed up and was making a switch stick. So yeah, just cleaned it off and it worked again.
Was she putting jam on the toast before she toasted it?
No, I think it's more 40 plus years of use gunked it up.
Glazed toast.
Oh god. To the point where like the holes in the toast are all filled in and it's just perfectly smooth.
Yes.
It's like lacquered.
It's like eating Frosted Flakes, but bread.
Frosted Flakes, but bread? That sounds like a poor child story. I was so poor, we ate Frosted Flakes that was bread. It was crunchy because mom would just put like a dash of sugar right on top of the Wonder Bread. Eat your Frosted Flakes.
We support Splenda and croutons.
The Italian ones or the butter and garlic ones?
Ugh, butter and garlic, obviously. Put that in a bowl of buttermilk, you're good to go.
You know, you probably could just like sprinkle some sugar on top of a slice of bread and put in the oven under the broiler for a minute and have it just caramelize on top.
That sounds delicious. I'm hungry now.
I just want caramel.
You always want caramel. I go, hey, Mickey, what do you want? And you're like, caramel. All the time.
I never really like caramel that much.
It's because you've added salt to it.
No.
Oh, salted caramel.
Salt makes caramel edible.
Yes, because what you want with pure sugar is pure salt to go with it.
No, no. Everything needs a little bit of salt, at least.
Yeah. This sugar's missing.
Except for fruit. If you put salt on fruit, you're an asshole.
Well, I hear it makes grapefruit better.
What about
nothing
like
makes
lime?
Grapefruit better. Grapefruit is already perfect.
Limes make margaritas, and you put salt on that.
But margaritas are awful.
Oh, you're wrong and dumb, and I don't like you anymore. You're not my friend. Margaritas are the best.
Tequila can just fuck straight off.
So, like, is there a proper name for making a margarita with vodka instead?
It's called a martini.
Yeah. Oh,
yeah, I guess so.
And it also sounds like something I would drink.
Look, I'm not into drinking. I don't know all this stuff.
Oh, boy, I am. Oh, and you should be tomorrow.
No, I think the drinking will be reserved for Wednesday.
Okay, well, fair enough.
It will be more necessary then.
Yeah.
But yeah, all that drinking, no wonder you and Mickey were friends.
Which is funny because, actually, Scott would refuse to drink for the longest time.
True. Yeah, I didn't get drunk the first time in my life until I was like 28.
I've never been drunk.
It's interesting. I did it the first time like as a semi-controlled experiment. Ended up drinking an entire bottle of Grey Goose. So
Jesus Christ.
Yeah, I had alcohol poisoning. I almost died. I got blacked out, passed out.
Were you doing this by yourself?
Well, there was other people like in the other room that I was had a roommate at the time, and it was like one of those things. He had like two master bedroom and master baths, but like the big central room, and he had friends over, and they were all kind of hanging out. But I went to my room and like was on the computer just drinking. I'd have my glass with ice and vodka in it, a little bit of cranberry juice. I'd drink it, like, oh, it's empty. So I'd get up and go pour some, sit down. Oh, wait, that's weird. It's empty. I'd get up, pour another glass, and then after about five or six of those, these giant tall like sweet tea glass size bottles, drinks of vodka. There was no cranberry juice at that point. It was just straight vodka. And then I went to the bathroom and then I passed the fuck out. Woke up a few times to puke and then was hungover like a motherfucker the rest of like for 2 days.
Semi-controlled experiment.
Well, yeah, because I was like, I decided, okay, well, I'm going to keep drinking because I've had like a drink. You know, I never liked the taste of it. Didn't like alcohol. I was like, I'm going to see if I can make myself drunk. I'm going to put the effort into it. I got about halfway there and then realized, wow, the more you drink, the better it tastes. Glick, glick, glick. And down he goes.
Your friends were assholes.
Yeah, they left me there, too. They didn't check on me or nothing. But I got to say, the next day, my little brother, who was living there too, he was very kind to me. I think it was the kindest my little brother has ever been to me is when I was hungover from drinking that night. He brought me Gatorade. He, like, you know, got a pillow and, like, set up the couch for me to lay on and brought me stuff. He was a real sweetheart. I don't know why he was nice to me that one time.
He thought you were going to die.
Apparently, I was miserable. But I remember, like, going, oh, those first couple of drinks that was a lot of fun. Let's just get to that point and not go any further than that. And I've pretty much stuck to that since. So, yeah, worked out.
It's always an adventure learning how to drink.
It is. It is. It's part of the fun. Assuming you don't die or do something like permanent.
And then as time goes on, you realize you can't do that anymore. Because you built up tolerance and you can no longer get drunk. You just get sleepy. At best.
Well, that can be okay, too, sometimes. See, because I started so late, I'm still in that pleasant phase where I can still use it as, like, better living through chemistry. So if I'm stressed or something's bugging me, I can have, like, a drink or two, relax, and everything's great. You know, I'm not hungover, you know, I'm not stressing. It's wonderful.
I think the takeaway from this is just that Mickey has drank too much alcohol in his life.
Yeah. I blame the podcast.
Understandable, I would.
Yeah.
I mean, after 7 years of this, it's a wonder I don't.
Well, I knew the first couple of nights that I did, I was drinking too, and then I realized, wait a minute, I don't have off on Tuesdays like some people. So the first couple of times, I was kind of drunk doing this podcast too, and then I kind of realized, probably shouldn't do that anymore. Even if I want to.
And oh boy, sometimes you want to.
Oh, I really do. Trust me, if I could recreate that perfect level of over-caffeinated and drunk I was that one time, oh, I would just
kind of... That was impressive.
That was... That I assume that's what cocaine is like. Because everything was awesome and I was doing awesome and just everything was great.
I only remember one occasion where I've over-caffeinated myself, and that's when I drank a whole 2 liter of Sun Drop in like an hour.
Oh my god. Between the sugar and the caffeine. I
don't caffeinated anymore either.
Yeah, I probably would have a hard time getting over-caffeinated myself since I don't drink anything that doesn't have caffeine in it.
Maybe I should start abusing pills.
Well, you are white, so that's the way to do it.
What an odd track we've gone down.
It's, you know what? To me, I'm so used to it now.
We're the best Star Trek podcast.
We are.
So, lessons, drink more.
I should get some of that Ketracel white shit.
Yeah, I hear that's good. Man.
It gives you a wicked buzz if you snort it.
Yeah, if you smoke it, it gives you like a wicked high. It's like a banana peel.
If you lick a Jem'Hadar, you get high.
All, either that or you get salmonella because they're all scaly.
Well, it's a risk, but...
It's like eating raw cookie dough.
Yeah, because... Yes, because licking a Jem'Hadar, that's the most dangerous thing you can do around a Jem'Hadar.
You never know, they might like it.
Oh, that's true. It's like, oh, we renounce our violent ways. Now we know that licking feels good.
Okay, so Netflix has been continuing DS9 on the background, and apparently they're at Cisco's dad's restaurant, mm-hmm. and Nog shows up.
Ah, you're watching Homefront.
And Cisco's like, I don't know you like Creole food. It's like, I don't. Your dad could get me live tube grubs and serve them to me here at his restaurant.
Oh, wow.
Well, and then Joe Sisko is like, I'm thinking of adding to the menu for the human customers.
But seriously, no.
Well, he makes the point of, I'd have to cook them for them. And then Nog is all like, cook them? But the best part is how they wiggle on the way down.
So I wonder
and then
how...
Sisko pukes in his Creole food.
And no one can tell.
So I wonder if like Klingons and Ferengi like sharing recipes. Because you have Gox, which is like living those black living worms. And then I imagine Ferengi would like that, right?
Probably, but I think that's about the only crossover we've seen between the kinds of foods they eat. Because all indications are the Ferengi diet is, like, heavy in bug-type things.
Yeah, it's beetles and stuff.
And the Klingons basically just eat anything.
Yeah. That is animal.
And I think uncooked. Klingons only eat Shakespearean food.
Like pheasants.
Giant venison. Roasted legs of things.
Right.
Roasted? So I don't think Klingons eat anything cooked.
Oh, good point.
Touché.
Do you think they just, like, breed an animal that's just a giant leg?
Well, I was thinking more like a centipede, but a deer. So it's got, like, six legs.
No, that's... No.
Yeah. Can you imagine the sound it would make when it runs to the forest at you?
I'm more thinking a centipede deer would have more than six legs.
Oh,
I'm thinking
sure.
A deer centipede would be, like, a bunch of deer sewn from mouth to butt.
Yes.
Watch where that antler is going.
That's why you only use female deer.
A doe?
A deer.
A female deer?
A female deer. Still one of my favorite Simpsons jokes of all time. Alrighty. Well, I think I'm pretty much drained. I think I'm
okay,
pretty much.
So next week on our Holodeck Misadventures Month, for anybody who's still listening at this point, is A Fistful of Data's for Next Generation.
I've never seen it. This should be fun.
That's season 6.
It's an excellent, another excellent, fun episode.
God damn it, it's going to be horrible.
Wait, if I remember correctly, it's been 20 years since I've seen it, if not more. So it could suck. Let's find out.
I can't wait to have a fistful of data.
Well, the thing to remember is it's a Worf episode.
It's a what episode?
A Worf episode.
Wait, isn't Alexander in it?
Yeah.
Oh. Well.
It's okay. He gets kidnapped eventually.
And killed, right?
I don't want to spoil it.
Yeah. Spoilers, sweetie. Okay. All right. Well, Fistful of Data's next week. Let's see if it holds up to nostalgia.
Let's see if there's still an internet next week to do this with.
Yeah. Good night and good luck.